What do you think the following things have to do with Pentecost? A summer camp for Syrian refugee children. An invitation to the Universalist Orthodox Church. The start of a major reconstruction project. The resurrection of last year's leadership culture survey. And the imminent installation of a homeless Jesus statue. Any ideas? It's not a riddle or a joke with a catchy punchline, sorry. It's just the question I have started asking myself as I've been thinking about how to pull all these things together for today's message. Some weeks, my sermon prep process begins with simple questions that go something like this. Okay, God, what are we up to right now that needs your love and light? How can we see and feel and know who we are through your love in a clear and tangible way? What are the words we need to hear for comfort or maybe for challenge? And sometimes the answer comes more quickly and clearly than other times. Sometimes multiple answers come, as was the case this week, but fear not, you're not going to hear three different sermons, but rather one, I hope, that brings together the litany you just heard in one clear, urgent, and compelling message and invitation. I use the words urgent and compelling with great intentionality for fear that we, the church, have lost the power of those monikers in our mission. Too often, I think we have domesticated the radical, invigorating, disturbing, and often chaotic nature of what it means to live as followers of Christ. I myself need this reminder, especially when Jesus kicks it up a notch, as I feel he is doing right now here in our midst, evident in a kind of holy chaos. Things are starting to move here at Trinity, and this feels like a really important time to remember who is in charge and how and why we are called into the dance to follow Jesus' lead. Some have called today our celebration of Pentecost the birthday of the Christian Church, and we point to the reading that we just heard so beautifully offered by our brother Dave from the book of Acts as our birth story, if you will. In Jerusalem for the festival, Jewish festival of Shavuot, or in Greek, Pentecost, the disciples were gathered together as the not yet ascended but resurrected Jesus had told them to do. He was just about to leave them forever and instructed them to wait in Jerusalem to receive the gift of the Holy Spirit in the form of a powerful baptism and then be sent out in his name to change the world. Episcopal priest and author Barbara Brown Taylor has a wonderful way of describing that event, and I want to read it to you today to help us really set the context. She writes, "On the day of Pentecost, God wanted to make sure that Jesus' friends were the inheritors of Jesus' breath, and it worked. There they were, all moping around, wondering what it was going to be like to not have Jesus with them, when they heard a holy hurricane headed their way. Before any of them could defend themselves, that mighty wind had blown through the entire house, striking sparks that burst into flames above their heads, and they were filled up with it. Every one of them was filled to the gills with God's own breath. Then something clamped down on them, and the air came out of them in languages they didn't even know that they knew. Like a room full of bagpipes all going off at once, they set up such a racket that they drew a crowd. People from all over the world who were in Jerusalem for the Jewish festival of Pentecost came leaning in the windows and pushing through the doors, surprised to hear someone speaking in their own language so far from home. Parthians stuck their heads in through the door expecting to see other Parthians. And Libyans looked around for other Libyans, but what they saw instead was a bunch of Galileans, rural types from northern Israel, dressed up in the equivalent of first century overalls, all of them going on and on about God's mighty acts, like a bunch of PhDs in Middle Eastern languages. And before the day was over, they had grown from 120 to more than 3,000. Shy people became bold, scared people became gutsy, and lost people had found a sense of direction. Disciples who had not believed themselves capable of tying their own sandals without Jesus' help had discovered abilities within themselves they never knew that they had. They had sucked in God's own breath, and they had been transformed by it. The Holy Spirit had entered into them the same way it had entered into Mary, the mother of Jesus, and for the very same reason. It was time for God to be born again, not in one body, but in a body of believers who would receive the breath of life and love and pass it on, using their own bodies to distribute it. This is the story of the Holy Spirit, how God performed artificial resuscitation on a room full of well-intentioned bumblers, turning them into a fierce force that ultimately changed the history of the world. So, my friends, the question for us today is this: do we still believe in a God who acts like that? Do we still believe in a God who blows through closed doors and sets our heads on fire? Do we still believe in a God with power to transform us, both as individuals and as a community? Or have we come to an unspoken agreement that our God is pretty old and tired by now, willing to hear our prayers and petitions, but not a God that we really expect to change our lives? So keeping that in mind, let's turn back to our initial list and look for signs of Holy Spirit among us. Signs that are both urgent and compelling, perhaps, when seen through the eyes of this feast of Pentecost. A summer camp for Syrian refugee children. The last week of June, we will be full of Syrian refugee children and volunteers when we open our doors to host a week-long music camp. The planning is well underway, and it is truly as complicated and messy as it is wonderful. Second, an invitation to the Universalist Orthodox Church. Starting on the first Sunday of June, we have offered to open up our chapel to a group of Universalist Orthodox Christians who have been looking for a long time for a church to provide sacred space for weekly afternoon worship. They have been excluded and cut off from the wider Orthodox faith because they are intentionally inclusive of the LGBTQIA community. Gifting them our chapel is also as complicated and messy as it is wonderful. Third, the start of a major reconstruction project. Also in June, we will be beginning our long-anticipated plaza repair project, which will, in the end, allow us to reopen our doors on Adams Street that are currently boarded up. And again, here we go. This, too, is as complicated and messy as it is wonderful. The resurrection of Trinity's Leadership Culture Survey. Last year, I understand that with the help of Leadership Toledo, the congregation engaged in a process to learn more about itself, its behavior as a system, in the interest of growing together in love. This week, Bryce Roberts from Leadership Toledo will be coming back to the vestry with a follow-up conversation and possible next steps. And again, yes, need I say, this too will be as complicated and messy as I believe in the end it will be wonderful. And finally, the imminent installation of a homeless Jesus statue. Last March, your leadership committed to the purchase of one of Ontario artist Timothy Schmaltz's bronze statues. The statue is a life-size man lying on a 7-foot city park bench. A blanket obscures most of the man's body, except for the feet of Jesus' crucifixion visible at the end of his body. This sculpture has been installed in other cities in the U.S., Canada, and abroad over the last 6 years, and it will be an amazing addition to the face of Trinity out in the street, and I am very excited. And yes, even planning for something like this is as complicated and messy as it is wonderful. Well, I'm sure that there are many more examples, but are you hearing the theme here? Everywhere we look, when we open our hearts and eyes to see the wildness of the power of Holy Spirit, holy chaos is sure to follow. It is my hope that together we will start to see and experience all of these things as gifts from the Holy Spirit. At times uncontrollable, at times unpredictable, but always life-giving. Through what I believe is our own time of Pentecost, I am seeing a multitude of miracles here among us, a plethora of possibilities, and an astonishing recurrence of resurrection power. In each of these experiences, we are invited to remember that the story of that first inbreaking of the Holy Spirit is our narrative still. It is a story that is still urgent and compelling because God is not done with us yet. You see, Pentecost didn't just happen once long ago. It is still happening again and again. And perhaps this is a good time to make a small personal confession. This probably won't surprise many of you to hear. I like things neat and tidy. Hey, I am a compulsive list maker. I make lists of my lists. Truth be told, sometimes I even put something on my list that is nearly or maybe already done just so I can cross it off because it feels so good. I love a good, well thought out plan. I am a fan of color coding and charting and systematizing anything that can be nailed down. I work well with deadlines and clearly anticipated and articulated expectations. So this whole notion of complicated and messy when it comes to Holy Spirit, not so easy for this little girl, and truly not my idea of how things work if I was to be in charge. So thank God, literally, I am not. And again, I am reminded of that wonderful bumper sticker, if Jesus is your co-pilot, move over. And thank God also for this feast day of Pentecost, to remind us that Holy Spirit is here among us, breathing new life into our tired bodies and often too controlling selves, pulling and pushing and igniting our hearts on fire, yearning for us to see with new and creative and expansive and generous hearts. Former Dean of Grace Cathedral in San Francisco once said, "Only a fool would pray for the Holy Spirit. Only fools for Christ pray for this kind of disruption in our lives." He also went on to suggest that the Spirit is most present at three open spaces in our lives. First, in the unpredictable. Second, in the place of greatest risk. And finally, in those areas which we simply have no control over. That was the place where those bumbling disciples found themselves that day, huddled in a room filled with fear. And here we are, some 2,000 years later, still feeling afraid at times and needing a holy nudge out of complacency, urging us to new life. So ready or not, here we go. This train is bound for glory, and we're leaving on an adventure of a lifetime. Stops along the way, unpredictable. Level of safety, too risky to tell. Length of the journey or the final destination, totally out of our control. But fear not, my beloved friends. We'll be together and we'll be speaking a language of love to others in a way that everyone will understand as if it was their own. Happy Pentecost. May it be so.